Hello, everyone, and welcome back to SCADcast and On Creativity with Paula Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Matt Nickley. Last spring, SCAD celebrated 10 years of Mary Cattranzu's namesake fashion label at the SCAD Fash Museum of Fashion and Film in Atlanta. Cattranzu's signature graphic prints bring vibrancy and electric excitement to clothing, accessories, and even home decor. They make powerful statements, and Cattranzu firmly believes and advocates for the power of colors to impact wellness. These days, we're finding joy in simple things that we took for granted a couple of months ago. We are discovering what matters most and what keeps us inspired. As Cattranzu said to us last week, quote, "We are currently experiencing a humanitarian crisis, which has affected the global community to an unimaginable extent. Today, more than ever, we need to stay creative, and inspiration is the best wellness tool to keep us all mentally healthy. I'm hopeful when I see how it has changed us all to be more empathetic and willing to support each other and our wider communities. I'm also positive that this reset button that is forcing us all to be introspective will give us the time to be inquisitive, be curious, and be more creative than ever before. Love, Mary." End quote. Cattranzu's ability to cut to the core of a situation and face life with integrity has fueled her profound career. When she visited SCAD Atlanta in 2019, she sat with Paula Wallace, and the two connected on her seemingly constant evolution and unconquerable spirit. From SCADcast, this is On Creativity, a conversation between Paula Wallace and Mary Cattranzu.
Delighted to be celebrating 10 years here at SCAD Fash with your exhibition. To what do you attribute your longevity?
First of all, I'd like to say it's a huge honor to be here, and I think learning more about all the exhibitions that you've put and the importance of each and every one of them, I can't really believe I'm here. So thank you for that, and thank you to your amazing team who believed in me and thought, Yay. You know, 10 years, yay, 10 years is a substantial body of work. But I think probably that I had a very unique voice from when I started on, and a lot of people defined it as niche, and a lot of people thought it's very specific, and it is, it's very personal, mm-hmm. my work. But I think in a very crowded space now, the more singular your voice, the more unique it is, the more timeless I think you can build it to be, because it's very authentically me. And I think the fact that it was a lot more democratic than people thought allowed me also to build it in that way. Because when I started, I didn't even know. And it was a time where, you know, many designers were more on the path of minimalism. And so coming with exuberant color and bold prints was very taboo. So I think the first obstacle was to allow prints to live as beyond a trend. And I think I helped in that. And it was the time of the digital print revolution. And so a lot of advances in technology allowed us to do it. And then beyond that, it was thinking, okay, but what do my prints mean? Why does somebody buy prints from me and not any other print brand or any other house that works with print? And the more I discovered why women are attracted to my work, the more I was able to hone that and build on that.
Mm. You're so good about talking about your work and so expressive, and I thought the students could learn a lot from you on that point alone, being able to talk about their work.
Yeah, so. But it took me a long time to get here.
You said you were shy.
I cannot believe that. No one can. My mother can't either. She once went to this clairvoyant, and she said, "Your daughter is a great communicator, and she could talk even to a chair." My mom's like, "My daughter talks to nobody." but then I think, you know, you go through phases, and then you're forced to talk about your work again and again and again. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you become doing it. So So now I feel comfortable, but at the beginning I wouldn't go up to talk to anyone. I wouldn't really talk about my work in an eloquent way. I wouldn't. I met Pierre Cardin. I was so ignorant as a child. He came to Greece.
Yes.
And my mother is obsessed by Pierre Cardin.
Wow.
He is her favorite designer ever. She owns so many of his pieces. And she took me to introduce him to him. And I was so shy. I said, I'm not going. And I ran. And she was like, Mary, come on. Like, you're going to get this opportunity. I was very young. And he was in Greece, and I think there was a connection. And she was like, Mary, how can you not, like, be proper? Come and say hi. I was like, no, I don't want to.
Oh, my goodness.
Such a missed opportunity.
Yes, yes. The people who are fans of your work, they love your work, and they love to hear your insights about it. And so that means, like, that takes it to a whole different level.
Yeah, I think you never think like that as a designer. You think, you know, your work speaks for itself. And But in the end, we do now, because you travel so much, you meet so many people. I think it's so important to be able to connect in a real way. And when I started, I didn't even exit the studio. I was like 2 years of nothing. And then I started going to fashion events, and I knew nobody. And I was like, wow, this is going to be difficult.
And multiculturally and different nationalities.
Yeah.
So I read an interview where you were in Dubai, and, you know, I saw your TED Talk in Greece. So, you know, you communicate with people around the world, and different things have different meanings. So it's wonderful that you share your inspiration and everything that your thinking behind everything, because sometimes people imagine that designers and artists work from the wrist down, and you know, you're thinking a lot about your work, you're doing a lot of research about your work. I mean, probably 24/7 you're thinking about your work.
Yeah, I think I always say that instinctively you design certain things, and then you need to spend the time to actually analyze what you did and what. So even if the analysis doesn't come before the work, it's important to give it time to analyze, why did I do that? What did it mean? What does it mean about me, about the brand? How does it connect to a woman who feels something when they wear it? And you don't have that maturity of thought when you start out. Sometimes I have some discoveries 3 years on. I was like, oh, that must have been it. But, you know, I think it comes when it comes. But it's important to give it the time. And I think there comes a time in your process that then you understand it.
Very smart. So you've dressed a lot of celebrities, Beyonce, Michelle Obama, Cate Blanchett. In fact, we're fortunate to have a gown that you designed for Cate Blanchett in the exhibition. You know, those are just a few of the many celebrities that you've dressed. How would you describe the Mary Catranzu woman?
I think, you know, the women I've dressed all have certain traits in common. And I think one is they're confident women, confident, accomplished women who are very generous and exude positivity. And I think and I hope that when they wear my work, they feel that. You know, I think color used as a wellness tool is so important these days.
I love that.
And I think there is that, you know, there's color theory in when you wear magenta or when you wear yellow or when
as
you wear the rainbow.
Yeah.
And I think you are subconsciously attracted to color, but it's incredibly uplifting. So I consider that the women who dress me are bold, they're daring, they're accomplished, they're confident. And they're also exuding personality and positivity. So I think that's what attracts them to my work. But equally, I've never met a woman that I don't respect who wears my work, whether she's a celebrity or whether she's a client I've met while traveling or a friend. They do have those things in common. They're very thoughtful, and they stand out, and they stand strong. And I think clothes can do that for a woman. If you feel confident in what you're wearing, you project your best self. So I think in that way, you know, my work attracts, you know, the women who feel that way with my work.
Absolutely. Your work is sought after in private collections. Mm-hmm. Who is that woman?
Well, that woman is somebody who appreciates art and design, I think, and has an eye for beauty and for wanting to hold something timeless and invest in something that I guess makes her happy years on when she kind of opens her archive or her wardrobe and knows that that's part of, you know, her and, you know, what she owns. So I think I don't know what it is exactly. I think maybe that my collections have been quite thematic and it's changed over the season. So there's an opportunity to buy into it again because, you know, if they have a piece from the postage stamp collection, maybe they have skipped one collection, but they'll come back because they connect to a theme or they connect to a technique or inspiration. So it is incredible that there are women out there that I think could actually one day stage an exhibition of my work. Ooh, because they buy it again and again. And that's an incredible feeling to know that that becomes your archive, because it gives validity to designing showpieces that you can produce in a ready-to-wear level. And when I started, I never wanted it, you know, to be unattainable. I don't think, you know, it's an applied design. It's applied design fashion. It's not. It's an art form in a way, depending on who you ask. But it's applied design, and it has to have a home. So, the fact that these women collect season after season these showpieces that we cannot produce in big numbers gives validity to me, creatively challenging myself to make those pieces. So, they've given me the freedom to really give my most creative self. And I think I'd be bored if I was just doing, you know, a shirt, a skirt, and just had a wardrobe and couldn't invest in really being creative and imaginative. Mm-hmm. So I thank them very much. But that, I think they buy the pieces because they're unique, and, you know, the collections themselves are uniquely themed.
Yes, they are. How does one appreciate the museum exhibition differently than a runway exhibition of your work?
For me, it's the details. It's the curation, it's the details, it's the journey. In a collection that you see a singular collection, one theme. We never have the opportunity to show 10 years
different simultaneously. Facets of you.
Different facets, and also the interplay and the dialogue, you know, even with the mirrors and the way it's staged, the kaleidoscopic part of the collection. You know, you look through one side and you look through a different season and you see how they all connect and the dialogue they create. And also details, my work, and this is something that I'm trying to find a way to combat, because the editors that see it, it's a fleeting moment. It passes so fast. And we do so much intricate work with embroidery and different techniques. They lose it. They don't even know. Sometimes they come to press days and they're like, oh, is that what this was? So I think for somebody studying fashion or studying textiles, I think there's an educational side of it that with a show on the picture on the runway, you would never be able to dissect. And I think from somebody who appreciates fashion or appreciates an exhibition of this nature, it's about really understanding the construction of the garment, the materials that it was made. A lot of people think every time there's an artwork, there's a print. I remember my press, I shouldn't say this, came once and we had these sequin trousers from Bauhaus, and they said, we love those printed trousers. It's like, that's not a print. So you know, wow. I think I still feel the need to say, everything that I do is image-led and it revolves around an image, but not everything I do is a digital print. Mm-hmm. It just has such a visual impact that it reads sometimes 2D. So until you see it up close, you can't appreciate the tactile nature of some of these clothes.
Mm-hmm. Some fashion kind of is moody, yes. I would say, but your work exudes optimism and color and joy. Could you describe your work a little bit in that vein as to like how it stands out?
I think my work is optimistic, and sometimes, you know, we had a print, particularly in pre-fall, and we called it the Moody Floral. And at some point I was like, guys, we call this the Moody Floral. It's like almost acidic levels. So even what we call moody, I don't consider, no one would ever consider moody at all. But I think it's a part of me, and a lot of people ask me, why do you wear black? And it's so removed from your work. But I think anyone's work is an extension of themselves. So I consider my work an extension of my personality. Mm-hmm. I'm an optimist. I'm open. I am positive. And I think, you know, that is reflected in my work. The fact that I wear black as a uniform doesn't really describe or define the personality of my work. So I think it's important with print. I think print is one of the first communicators when you're wearing something, because it's image-led, it's a conversation starter. You're saying much more about yourself with print than you would with any other dress form. You're communicating a lot already about yourself. So I think in that way, the most important message to communicate is that of optimism and positivity, and you have to feel good in your clothes. So I think print, it's almost, it's how do you say that? It almost has that meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. I think a print being miserable would be a very sad situation. No one would want to wear a sad print. I think it's kind of, how do you say, part and parcel, or how do you say that?
Yes, part and parcel.
Part and parcel.
Exactly. Yes.
Of the nature of prints.
Expression of your identity, too.
Yeah.
So we've heard a lot about fast fashion, prêt-à-porter, mm-hmm. couture, but you were discussing demi-couture last night. What is this phenomenon, demi-couture?
So demi-couture had been used a few times to define my work, so I kept hearing demi-couture, demi-couture. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, maybe we do demi-couture. and I think it's that it's a space where a woman would buy something from you made to measure in her measurements, and probably not many women in the world would have it, but it doesn't have the price point of haute couture, where everything needs to have been done by hand, where in order to be part of the Chambre des Syndicales in Paris, mm-hmm. you would have to have at least 20 people working for you based in Paris. So it's, mm-hmm. it's, I guess, a term that's more flexible, and I feel it's more relevant today, because it allows you to say that in a ready-to-wear show, I can have an offering for my wholesale clients, which can go into production of many, many units, but I can also present certain pieces that are very special in nature that we cannot reproduce in those types of numbers, but we build a clientele who comes to us who could buy it as it is in the runway, made to measure, or tweak. So it mm-hmm. kind of goes into the realm of bespoke a little bit. And mm-hmm. we do that more and more. And I think women nowadays seek independent brands and seek the opportunity to design something unique that no one else would have, but not at the price point of an haute couture piece from an established house where, you know, the workmanship can almost be that, mm-hmm. But it doesn't have the formality of being mm-hmm. defined as that. So mm-hmm. I think it's just an adaptive term that's used for this kind of new wave of designers creating very special pieces and having a loyal fan base. And I think now that's more important than ever, because wholesale is a difficult environment. So I'm lucky enough to have a loyal clientele that 10 years on has stood by me and keeps on buying me. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm so, so grateful that they are not bored of me. They still want to buy pieces and they discover something new about themselves.
We can't wait to see what you produce next.
Oh, thank you. Well, hopefully you can come to London.
Oh, well,
I would love to extend an invitation.
Thank you.
Or maybe not London.
Or maybe not. Yeah, I know. You're giving us little hints. Like, where will Mary be next? Who can find Mary? We'll follow you around the world. You were sharing some insights with the student docents yesterday. Yeah. Very brilliantly.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's part of the exhibition is so important.
Student docents.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Because they're studying these subjects.
Yes.
And, you know, I was talking to some of the students last night and I was saying, well, the color theory students will have a field
yes.
day here. And not only the fashion students, but interior design and three-dimensional design and drawing and 2D design. So they'll all be coming in and studying.
It's so exciting that you have these exhibitions where all the students can be up close and personal with these pieces for mm-hmm. the duration of time.
You mentioned at one point the importance of a certain Suzy Menkes critique.
Yes.
How did that inform your career?
I think it was really a benchmark because up until then, not having come from fashion, I would study every single review and critique. You know, I've been so touched with the things that have been written. And
yes.
that gave me the energy and the
but
boost.
That one
did a different story. So up until then, I was being boosted. It gave me energy to do better and try harder. And then she had been a great support of mine from the beginning. And in that review, she said, I don't remember the wording, but she basically said, turn off your computer. and by that, she meant no more digital prints. Because up until then, my career had been about exalting the image, taking or juxtaposing maybe, you know, elements that one wouldn't put together or blow up an image so big that it defines a silhouette, but it was all around digital printing. And we had started looking at different techniques of embellishment and form and silhouette. But when you put a print like mine on the runway, it obliterates everything else behind it, above it, below it. It's just about the print. So she was making a point that your work doesn't need to be just about the print. And I think I was ready to move beyond that. And I think she gave me the ground to feel it's time, that there was fatigue. It's first, the press and people who really know your work that will comment on that. And then eventually your client too. So it made me really free in feeling I can finally do that, because I tried it a season before and it wasn't well received. So what Susie wrote, and it was probably because I wasn't happy in designing that particular collection either, because I didn't feel I was doing something new, and I'm motivated by newness. That's who I am. Whenever there's a new discovery, a new technique, I'm excited. So she gave me, I think, the confidence to move away. And so then for a series of collections, we took print entirely out of the equation, so there's no confusion on the runway if it's a print or not, and tried to define my work beyond print, but keeping the aesthetic and the fact that it's still based on the image very much at the heart of the collections, but no print for the next 2 years. So 4 collections of no print after Susie Menkes.
She had a big impact.
She had a massive impact, and she still has. I read everything she writes, and I think she has the context of fashion, what came before, what is now, who I am. And I think that's when, you know, what somebody writes is very, really, it's reflective of the times, and it's a true insight into what you do. And I knew it's coming from a place of somebody who's a big supporter of mine. So, yes, Susie Menkes.
So we love collections at SCAD, and apparently seeing the retrospective of your work, you love collections
yes.
too. What is so appealing about a collection based on a collection?
I think that in itself, I think, allowed us to take on ideas we've done before and create a new collective. So it allowed you to tap into collections you've done in the past, defining them now as thematically connected to a collection, when back then I didn't realize that's what it was about. But it also allows you to form new collections,
yes.
and hopefully the entire collection be a collective in its own right in the future. So I think how people attach emotion to certain items and how they want to bring beauty around them is such a human instinct, and it's so connected to how you feel, you know, with what you put on your body, that I wanted to really analyze that connection, where somebody can collect perfume bottles or postage stamps or nature or art, and why they collect it, and how that does butterflies, and how that feels when it becomes a collectible that you have in your wardrobe. And that is what a lot of my pieces become, and what I aspire for them to be. So it was very explorative, and it allowed us to cross-pollinate between many seasons and connect different ideas but turn them on their head. And I think, you know, as a collective, when I looked at it and when I look at it now at the exhibition, it really is a true reflection of everything we've done in the past, as much as you can do in one singular collection.
We teach interior design at SCAD, and I notice a symbiosis between interior design and fashion in your exhibition, especially that fabulous Chesterfield sofa / bomber jacket.
I grew up around design. My mother is an interior designer, and she also designed and had a factory that built her own furniture. So I grew up more reading World of Interiors and Architectural Digest than Vogue. So I think I was brought up around design, and I did have an affinity towards creating all these fantastical environments by means of collage. And I studied initially textiles for interiors. So in my work, I think interiors have played a big part in our let's say, mood boards. You know, we've done a collection on objects of art that was looking at kind of Diana Freeland's apartment, and looking at, you know, what that meant and how, you know, that traveling eye that brings all these objects mm-hmm. becomes a definition a little bit of each woman's aesthetic. Or we did a collection on interiors with all the Architectural Digest clippings, and then we did Bauhaus and looked at Victorian furniture, and one of the techniques that we looked at was the Chesterfield sofa. Mm-hmm. So I think there's something about taking a 3D object and seeing how it connects to the 3D-ness of the female figure that has been a fascination mm-hmm. of mine from the beginning, from the hourglass silhouette of a perfume bottle to the technique of a Chesterfield sofa. So I think it's a recurring theme that comes in and out of my work, and hopefully I'll get it out of my system when we do homework and I'll be like, okay, I don't need to put it on the woman anymore. I can do my own sofa. So it's something that I'm interested in. I think the environment we live in and, you know, why we choose certain things around us is equally as important as what we choose to put on our bodies.
Mm-hmm. And it all looks beautiful.
Thank you.
It's all three-dimensional design when you think about yes. it, architecture, furniture, and fashion.
Yes.
But fashion is movable.
Yes. I learned that when I did the ballet. And we sent them these ideas, and the choreographer called me, Justin Peck, and said, Mary, these dancers need to move. This is the purpose of dance. And I was like, okay, because obviously a lot of my work... some of the structures are not like free, are not enhancing when it comes to movement. So it made me look at a woman's body in a very different way, where everything that we design, its sole purpose had to be to really mm-hmm. highlight all the incredible movement and lines that they do. And that allowed me, I think, to free up my silhouettes quite a lot, actually, because we started looking at precision engineering a second skin for a woman. Mm. And my work hadn't been about a second skin. It had been about building form on a woman. So mm-hmm. There was a part, and I think collaborating with Victoria's Secret also did that, where precision engineering form onto a woman's body becomes the most important focus. And through doing the Paris Opera and New York City Ballet, I was able to really educate myself in that way and think about the body in a different way.
Mm. So many different aspects to your work. We're here at SCAD Style.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, what is your definition of style?
Style? God, that's such a difficult one. I think style to me is an expression of personality and a timeless one, not one that's driven by... you know, a current trend, or not necessarily being in sync with your times, but it's kind of an expression of a movement or of a feeling or more than that. But it's something that transcends, I think, that moment of time that we are in now.
Mm, love it. Thank you, Mary. This is
Thank
wonderful.
You so
is
much.
There anything else that you would like to talk about?
That I'm very honored to be here
Thank you
and everyone, that I definitely have to return to Atlanta, have to visit Savannah, and just that seeing everything here, I feel very blessed to be part of it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Mary Cotranzu. In thinking about our personal brands and how our work has a unique place in the world, consider what words you can prescribe to it. What's the story behind your work? Can those biographies and purpose statements publicize your art, designs, and creations and grab an audience's attention? Consider every angle of what your creations mean. Know what you do and capitalize on it. Thank you for tuning in to SCADcast and On Creativity, executive produced by SCAD president and founder Paula Wallace, with original music by SCAD alumnus George Lovett. On behalf of the entire SCAD community, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay active. We'll see you next time.